As the Buddha noted, when we encounter suffering or pain in life, we respond by searching for a way out. And that search comes in two forms. One is what he calls the ignoble search. In other words, you look for happiness, you look for an escape from pain and suffering in things that will age, grow ill, and die, or that will be affected by your own aging, illness, and death. And then there's the noble search, which you search for something that is free from aging, free from illness, beyond death. That's what his search was. And when you think about it, this search is what makes us human. Common animals can look for things that age, grow ill, and die. But they can't look for the deathless. This is something that's specifically a human pursuit. And it's something that should be honored. After all, the Buddha does call it a noble search. Even if you don't get there in this lifetime, still the search itself is noble. It asks special things of you in terms of what you have to give up and the work you have to do to develop the qualities that will take you to the deathless. But simply the motivation that you want to find a happiness that's not going to depend on conditions. That's a noble motivation. It's important to remember, this is what makes us human. There was an incident years back. There was a famous physicist, Richard Feynman, who in addition to working on quantum theory, also played the bongos. And he received a fan letter one time from someone who'd read one of his books and heard about him, said, "It's learning that you play the bongos that makes me realize that you're a human being." And Richard Feynman fired back a letter. And fired is the operative verb here, saying that, no, it was doing physics that made him a human being. How can you say doing physics, even though it's calculation and it's maybe some of the calculations seem to be fairly arid and very demanding? But that's an important part of being a human being, is pushing yourself, using all of your faculties. And one of the problems in our culture is that we don't appreciate this aspect of being human. Just this evening I was reading an article by a psychologist who was talking about her Dharma teacher, who had had some training in a monastery. And he didn't have any training in being a human being, she said. In the monastery they taught detachment. And being human, of course, is all about being attached, entangled. That places a very limited, very domestic view on what it means to be a human being. Because our desire for true happiness, that's what makes us human, with the emphasis on the true. Because we've looked for pleasures in all kinds of things. And as John Lee once commented, even dogs can find pleasures. But that's the desire for something special, for a happiness that's not going to disappoint, that happiness that's not going to harm anybody. Common animals don't think about whether their happiness is going to harm anybody. They just take what they can get. But as human beings, we have to think about what impact our happiness is going to have on other people. And so the deathless is another way in which we find a true happiness that gets us out of the feeding cycle entirely. I mean, you look at the world, everybody's feeding on one another. The Buddha's image was of a puddle of water that was drying up, and the fish were fighting over what little water was left. And you look at that, you know, the water's going to dry up eventually someday, and they're all going to die. But in the meantime, they're all fighting one another. So that gave rise to Sangwega, which can be translated lots of ways. It can be translated as dismay or terror even. The realization that if your happiness depends on that little bit of water, you're going to create a lot of bad karma and then you're going to die anyhow. Is that all there is to life? And his answer was no. That's what basada is, that defiant answer to the limitations that people normally accept in life. The conviction that there's a way out and that through human effort you can find it. We're lucky we have the example of the Buddha. The Buddha didn't have any example in his days. They talk about the knowledge within society that at some point in the past there were Buddhas, but nobody knew what they were or what they taught. But they were inspiring. That's all they knew. But for the most part, people just said, well, just take what you can get. The world offers this much. Grab as much as you can before you go, because if you don't grab it, then somebody else will grab it. But then whoever grabs it is going to have to let it go. There must be something better. And it's that conviction that there's something better and the willingness to make whatever sacrifices are necessary to find that something better. That's what makes this search noble. What makes it really human. So even though the culture at large doesn't appreciate it, at least we should learn how to appreciate this. In Thailand, with all the failings and faults of Thai culture, at least this is something that they do appreciate, is when someone goes forth. It's something to be honored. It's celebration. It's something to be celebrated. This is what they know makes their culture valuable, because it's that opening to the culture of the noble ones. So they encourage it. And the going forth of an individual is not just an individual thing, because after all there has to be support. And both sides are responsible for the other, or responsible to the other. The person going forth has to make sure that his or her needs are as small as possible, so that you're not burdensome on others. And there's that sense of indebtedness to the support you get. I mean, your people who are in no way related to you treat you as a relative. They give you food. They don't ask for anything in return, aside from the fact that you practice. There were times in Thailand I'd be on my alms round and walking past a little shack. One in particular I remember was a newlywed couple. They had this little shack and it was just big enough for the two of them to lie down. And they had a little kitchen in the back, which was just a little charcoal stove and a few cabinets, and that was it. And almost every morning they had some food for me. A little piece of sausage, a little dried fish, a little rice, whatever. And the sense of indebtedness that comes from being the beneficiary of poor people's generosity. I'd come back and I'd have my meal and I'd remind myself, okay, you really got to practice today. So the act of going forth is it's a social event. And it is an interconnected event. That psychologist who thought that life in a monastery was just very detached and very cut off from the human race didn't know anything about monasteries. As you can see here, we have a lot of contact with human beings of all kinds. And we're all coming together in a voluntary way and dealing with a very specific and important problem, the fact that everybody's suffering and wants a way out. So we're all working together on a noble purpose, with a noble motivation, to the extent that we want to find that happiness. That doesn't turn into anything else, something that's ageless, free of illness, and deathless. That's what makes our human life noble.